Okay, sorry about that, ladies and gentlemen. The bloody pesky mute buttons, eh? All right, you're now listening to the Vinny Eastwood Show on American Freedom Radio. This is our delayed broadcast. Got delayed by a couple of seconds there because of my ineptitude. It's been a frustrating, angering day. We've been talking about all sorts of stuff, from the fact that virtually no Kiwis can ever buy a home in their own land. The fact that cannabis hasn't actually had any lawful progress on its legal status, especially for the medical users who are dying literally in some cases without it. And I'm just kind of bottling up a large quantity of rage and a burning fireball sensation inside my brain places that is helping me, for some reason, to clarify exactly what it is that is wrong this country. And you know what I figured out, ladies and gentlemen? You know what's wrong with this country? Everything! There's nothing right about it, apart from some of the people that are in it. So, today, we are going to be talking to Ruben Taipari from up north. Ruben, welcome to the program.
Kia ora whānau, kia ora Vince.
Now, for those in the American audience, whānau means family. Now, Ruben is a activist of some note, and I was first made aware of his activities when he busted into the what do you call fake Maori who sell out other Maori, bro? I don't know if there's actual a term for it, but you did so. A what?
Kūpapa. Called kūpapa.
Yeah. that's clever. Hey, do you know what the word for two dads that work together is? Co-papa. Anyway, all right, so we are talking about activism itself in recent times, particularly the TPPA, and I saw that you were on the Hikoi March, which managed to get all the way from up north down to us here in the scum city of Auckland to bolster the crowd, essentially. And, you know, we were very, very happy to have all the visitors here helping to block the streets, helping to lead the protest marches, and that kind of thing. But I'd like to get your perspective about the Hikoi itself, because I didn't really know all that much about it, who was leading it, how many people there were, the important details, etc.
Okay, then, cool as. First, Vince, mihi atu ki ngā whānau whānui to all of our freedom-fighting brothers and sisters and throughout the world who tuned into that Hikoi. Ngā mihi nui ki a koutou. Mea ko te kōrere ke irongi te hikoe, mea ke a whawhai tōnu mātou, ake. And that's a kōrere that comes from our tūpuna when the British invading soldiers were fighting us and we had nothing left to fight against them. We just stood up in the trenches and we says, they told us to surrender, Vince. We says, hell no, we'll fight on forever and ever and ever. And that was 100, 200 years ago. We're still fighting on today to protect our freedom. That's what it is that the Hikoi was about. A Hikoi is just a march. It's something, a march and a Hikoi is we do. Our only form that to hold this government of ours account, to hold all these governments and corporations to account, we do Hikoi down here in Aotearoa. Why do I do Hikoi, Vince? It's because it's a galvanizing vehicle. It brings people together. Sometimes, you know, you just think that it's only just you that's pissed off at the government. It's just you alone and all the government spin doctors come at you and say, nah, you're just crazy. You don't know the rest of the country is happy with these decisions we're making. And so we get out there and we hit the road and we start off with a small core crew of us and we walk and we'll stop in and we'll wake up towns and we'll hit the towns with megaphones and placards and all sorts, and we'll go through there and we'll put challenges out to the community. Are you happy? Do you support what the government's actions? Do you support what your leaders are saying is going to be the future for your children and your community? And we'll ask around. If you've got a good, strong opposition, a powerful force will come out. Basically, that's what happened, Vince. By the time we hit Auckland, we'd done it over 4 days. We left one end of the country, which is Te Reringa Wairua, Te Reinga, the Cape up here, and we marched, and it took us about 3 or 4 days to reach Auckland. by the time we hit Auckland, the power in Auckland City and Tamaki Makaurau was so strong. I tell you, man, that was some powerful shit, mate.
I never seen anything like it, bro. I've been in 10 years of activism, and I came into the city to, you know, like all the motorways and shit were blocked. I had to go all the way around to the Auckland domain in order to park at my mate's place to walk into the city. So, yeah, bro, it felt totally different to any protest I've ever been to.
Mate, I've been on, between my wife and I, we've been on more than 40 to 50 protest rallies, occupations, hikoi, stands against the government. And we've been on some powerful ones, bro. 50,000 at the anti-GE marches, the mining marches, the foreshore and seabed one, which is a huge one for Māori to protect our rights as tangata whenua. That was 40,000 and 10 years ago. And the difference between those and this one is the numbers were about 25,000 to 30,000, I hear. Sweet ass. I tell you, man, it was hard to hold that one on course. I was, myself and a few of the others, Jane Kelsey and Honi Harawira, we had got that hikoi going because we wanted to hear what the people were saying in the country and the turnout of the people in the. I got to say, man, well, there was a lot of pissed off brothers and sisters, and I'm not talking about just the iwi kāinga, I'm not just talking about indigenous Māori, I'm talking about everybody, man. Pākehā, Asian, Islander, even the bloody government servant organisations, you know, they couldn't say nothing. They'd been muffled by government organised government, but they were just like, it was mean. It was mean, man. It was a form of unity. Socialists were in there. The bloody, every man and his dog was in there. There's a couple of wizards from down South Island turned up. Yeah, mate, there wasn't nobody who wasn't there. And that was just, that's just the show of powerful people are passionate about our freedom, Vince. We're passionate about protecting the rights of our future and of our children, our tamariki. So yeah, man, that was some powerful stuff that happened that day.
Yeah, well, I think freedom only stays in place because people take personal responsibility to defend it.
Yeah, for sure, and it's worth it. This corporate organization, these corporations that are trying to take over our country, take over our rights. We've got things in place down here in this country that we're proud of. We've got a treaty that's been around for 180 years, Te Tiriti o Waitangi, and that's bringing it to the fore again. We've got to honour that treaty. It's not just a Māori indigenous thing. It's everybody, treaty partners in there, our Pākehā and our Tauiwi, our partners are in there.
Ruben, I'll stop you there, because you and I both know that the vast majority of New Zealanders have never read the treaty, don't even know what's in it, let alone know how the TPPA is going to affect it. I was wondering if you could actually elucidate on that just a little.
So, Sean, hey.
Oh, no, we seem to have lost him. Oh, wait, there we go. We've got you back, Ruben. Ruben, are you there? Having some few problematic technical glitches up that way. Here we go. I think we've got you back, Ruben.
Oh, good man. Awesome.
Oh, no, we lost him again. Oh, this is problematic. He keeps popping in and out like a little prairie dog. All right, there we go.
we're freedom fighters, dude. You know, we're pirates. Of course we're going to drop in and out. All these bloody corporations are trying to shut our voice down, man. I live up in the WAPs where there ain't no power where I live. I live off the grid. I grow my own gardens. I feed my children from my land. So, yeah, hell yeah, man. We're rebels, dude. Nothing comes easy. It's worth the fight.
Now, my question was, what is the treaty in layman's terms, and also how does the TPPA threaten it?
That's a huge question for all Indigenous peoples who have treaties around the world. Our Treaty of Waitangi was signed in 1840. It was signed with 500 chiefs of my people who are Māori, and we honour that document. That document still stands today. It's a living, breathing document, which means guys like me and you, Vince, we've got to talk about the Te Tiriti and understand the articles in there to protect our sovereign rights. But how the TPPA threatens that document is it's a new agreement. They call it a trade agreement, unassuming, and it sounds like nothing important. But that shit's bloody bad, man. In the actual document, 6,000 pages of information, and the government refused to release the agreement for public to do submissions on, to peruse, to understand.
Well, they refused to release the information on that. Sorry, Ruben.
Stand. And then they just went off and signed it. The document that we, the countrymen of this of Aotearoa, didn't even get the part.
Well, this is very problematic.
Dictatorship, man. And that's why we marched against them on the 6th of February, 2 days later.
Okay, this might be impossible. Yeah, yeah, that's it's just a bit too much of a pain. What we're going to do then is I want to try and add Penny Bright to the call because she can weigh in on this as well. And in fact, she was the scheduled guest for today, and we'll see if she can be connected up. So yeah, I apologise for the technical difficulties here, ladies and gentlemen. We're having great problems here. Yeah. Producing on air is not exactly the ideal for a talk radio show host, and Penny's not picking up either. Okay, so looks like I have to rant about the TPPA by myself for like an hour, isn't it? Yep, starting to look that way. Okay, so what Ruben was saying there before. And I think there might be a great difficulty if you're able to pop in your landline number or something for me there, Ruben. We might be able to connect you on a phone, possibly. So I'll just... Man, this is just driving me nuts. I mean, really. Really. It's just driving me absolutely crazy. Okay, Ruben, if you have a phone number, bro, can you Facebook message that to me and I'll try and connect you on the phone, bro?
Yeah, you got a pen?
No. I've got like a computer in front of me with a keyboard and stuff. It's way better than a pen. But I'm just saying, don't give it out on air for all the listeners and other people, because this has been recorded and there might be some scumbaggery pieces of trash who might want to give you a call at home and threaten your family, kind of thing. So. Just send it
anyway, man.
Yeah, just flick it to me on a Facebook message. I've got my Facebook open here, and we'll crank that out and connect you that way if it's at all possible. Landline number's preferable. I'm not sure if I'll be able to afford a cell phone number. What have I got? I got like $10 worth of Skype credit. Yeah.
I ain't got none of that. Let's just hang in there, bro, and just keep going.
All right. If you say so. Because it's very difficult speaking when you're cutting out like every couple of minutes or something like that. Because you'll cut out in the middle of something that you're saying, and then you'll come back and you're like, maybe you've been talking for about 5-10 seconds, and that 5-10 seconds was gone. And then you come back and you're continuing to talk, and you just dropped out again. So I can't even tell you how the technical difficulties are going before you drop out. So, yeah. Yeah, just sign into your Facebook and Facebook message me that number, bro, and I will see if I can connect you up. Okay, we've got that. Excellent. All right, adding. Add people. Add a phone number. +64. That might work. If we... No? Is that going to work? Add? Yeah? Okay. Calling now. We shall see if it works, ladies and gentlemen. And I must apologise profusely for the old technical difficulties on this one here. Ruben, welcome.
Hey, mate.
Okay, well, we're glad we got that sorted. So, please, we're going to have to start right from the beginning again. Please tell us a little bit about the treaty and how it's actually being threatened by the TPPA.
Okay, then, so the treaty is a historical document signed between Indigenous peoples, which is Māori, that's me, and my treaty partner relatives, which is the Pākehā, British settlers, etc., who open up the doorways for all of the all of Tau Iwi, all of the immigrants to come into this country and enjoy the benefits of Aotearoa New Zealand. That was the Te Tiriti o Waitangi. It was signed on the 6th of February in 1840. So fast forward to today, 2016, and right now we've got this new treaty that's been signed by corporations from around the world called the TPPA, the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement. So, you know, it's a new treaty. And what we're up irate about is that Indigenous peoples, first of all, have had no consultation, we have no participation whatsoever in that document. Second of all, nobody, not even the Pākehā whānau, the treaty partners, or the immigrants have had a participation either. The government has refused to open up the document until just only about a month ago. They put the 6,000-page document out on the web for everybody to go over, and they didn't even wait for Santa Claus, but they just invited 11 ministers down here last week from 11 countries representing 800 million people. That's from Malaysia, Japan, Dubai, Canada, America. Anyone who touches on the Pacific Ocean have all been came down here last week to sign off a document of agreement, of consent to say, yeah, let's get on with the TPPA. Now, that's an insult to my people. That's an insult to this country that they would do that here on the cusp of our celebrations for Te Tiriti Waitangi. The Tiriti Waitangi Day is just like the 4th of July in America. You know, it's powerful. It's powerful. It's important for us to recognize and commemorate that signing. It's that big. And so for them to do that, to sign on the 4th and expect us on the 6th to roll over and take it from the backyard, well, hell no. Hell no. That's why 30,000 of us marched on Auckland streets on the 4th of February, and we occupied the main street. We occupied the entire city, shut down the entire city. We had fellas running around, cocktail bombing bloody officers, and they weren't meant to do that, but that's what they were up to. Block down streets, shut down the highways, shut down harbour bridges, just shut the whole city down, and the government was irate about that. And then they had the cheek to try and come up to where we commemorate the celebration of our tiriti here in the actual community of Waitangi up here in the north, the far north. He says, hell no, you're not going to do that either. And we told the Prime Minister that he wasn't welcome here. And, you know, what a coward. He should have still shown up. He should have taken abuse. That's what he gets paid
the way,
for.
The way I heard it is that he did show up the day before Waitangi Days without notifying anyone so that he could get there without any of the protesters knowing he would be there.
Well, then that's a technical, bro. The symbolism is that he represents the Crown and the government. And if he can't show up on the day that he's expected, that we're all there to agree to him and hold him accountable, well, man, I don't know if I'm allowed to swear on this, but he's a pussy, mate.
Oh, you
he's
can fucking coward. Swear if you want, bro.
I'm a good man. I try to behave. My nana listens in sometimes. So I'm just saying, bro, what a pussy, man. He should have fronted up, you know. He's accountable. He's the one made this decision without anybody else participating in this decision. He's gone off, flown off to America and had all these meetings in Canada and all around the world for the last 5 years. And now that we're wanting to understand what the hell he's up to, he's a no-show. You know, man, what a coward, dude.
Well, he doesn't take his responsibilities as the head of state very seriously at all. I mean, let's face it, this is the most disruptive protest that the country's seen in a long time. Long, long time, okay? At least a decade or two. Because I haven't heard of a protest actually shutting down the entire city before. I've heard of ones that are the length of Queen Street, but not something that actually is crossing all of those boxes, shutting down an entire city, getting people of all different races and creeds and nationalities who are all Kiwis into the centre of the city together against one thing in particular, right? And I've never seen that before. And he shrugs it off and he just goes, ah, the rent a mob.
Oh, you know, there was so much activity on. He got nailed, bro. He got nailed trying to say that there was a rent a mob and that nobody cared about the TPPA and actually everybody agreed with him. How the hell can you agree with a guy who refuses to share the information on what the hell they're agreeing on? You know, it's ridiculous. It's so, you know, he got nailed there. He didn't turn up to to the commemorations that he's supposed to turn up to every year, and yet I think it was about 5 years, 6 years ago, he gave the previous Prime Minister stick because she didn't show up. She refused to come to Waitangi and be accountable, and he's not much better caliber of a Prime Minister himself. And then when he does show up, so his ministers got nailed, and you know, this is just going to carry on. This is going to build. This COPUP is building, and you're right. There hasn't been anything like this galvanizing the people to come together like this in 30 years. 30 years since the Springbok tours when we fought against the apartheid with the South Africans. You know, we fought against that, and we blew that out of the water. That was John Minto and them, eh? They were warriors. They're soldiers, them. Sue Bradford, Jane Kelsey was in on that as well. Hone Harawira, all of those old soldiers.
Let's not forget Penny Bright.
Hey?
Let's not forget Penny Bright.
Oh, that's my girl, Penny Bright. And, you know, she's a legend as well. Penny Bright and all of those guys down there who are fighting the fight and fighting for the freedom it's not just about democracy and government. It's about freedom of decision and choice to want to live how you want to live in your own land. It's just getting crazy out there how government is controlling every facet of the community right now, man. And we've had enough. The people's got to rise up. People's got to come together, regardless of the diversity. I love diversity. So, you know, whatever culture, creed, bloody religion, or whatever beliefs, or even the parties. We had people part of the Prime Minister's party marching with us who are against this, agreement. So it just shows you, man, that this movement that we're creating, a powerful voice for the people, it's a powerful thing, and I'm looking forward to carrying on and supporting the direction of this COPUPO.
A friend of mine who went to the protest earlier, and he was actually there in Auckland the night before to help a bunch of people who were projecting anti-TPPA messages onto the sides of buildings in Auckland. He believes in his tarot cards, like a lot, you know, he loves them. And he was just like, something he told me that day was kind of like interesting. He's like, bro, before I went, I read my cards, right?
Yep.
And I got the victory card. And I was like, whoa. That's actually very interesting because I haven't actually been to a protest before where I felt that sense of just victory. Like we actually achieved something, you know?
Yeah. I'm glad to hear that. We're great believers, our indigenous peoples. We believe in what's called tikanga, mātauranga, and following the signs, and our ancestors leave clues and they guide us in certain ways, and we are very aware of those things too in our own understanding of our culture. And I agree. When we left Te Rere Ngāwairua, which is a very spiritual place in itself, on the 1st of February, we knew we had the support of our ancestors, and that's important to us, Vince, that we have the support of our ancestors behind us. And we knew that before we even left for Tamaki for Auckland, that it was going to be a victorious movement for the people, because what we're fighting for is bigger than just silly shit like money and economy and jobs and stuff like that. It's fighting to protect our culture and protect our freedom. And the unity that came out of that march, we took it back. So, you know, after the hikoi, we had to get back on the road and head back to Waitangi. And we carried on that message back up into Waitangi itself, and the unity that was in there, everybody marching together and taking that movement through to its completion, it definitely hasn't faded away. It's definitely not. If anything, it's more powerful. There was some crazy stuff done. So one girl got 5 million bloody views for one of the things that she'd done against the ministry, and good on her. She's part of our crew, and we fully support her. And there's all these other initiatives that are going on. So not by a long shot is this over. Not by a long shot at all, Vinny.
And I think it was quite interesting. Like she threw a sex toy at Minister Stephen Joyce, who's the government communications minister, or at least former communications minister, and he just kind of shrugs it off, and he's kind of laughing a little bit about it. Until the nickname came out, and then people started calling him Dildo Baggins, and I was like, oh yeah, bro.
Well, the symbolism of that act was relative, you know, at that particular time, because we kind of got it. We got phone calls about it when it happened. She was a part of our hikoi, but she did that act on her own. There's one of our young friends, Josie Butler. She's from down the South Island. And South Island is a redneck town. It's like, you know, I don't know, Alabama or something. But it's just pretty hearty that a girl like that, who's a young girl, intelligent, award-winning nurse, who, you know, committed to protecting the sovereignty of our people, and she understands how the TPPA is going to affect the future, how it's going to affect pharmaceuticals, and how it's going to affect being able to help people and from healing and medicines, etc., that she done that act, and that she threw a sex toy as a you know, there's a lot of symbolism in it. If you understand how that works, and it was a great protest, powerful protest, and I support it. I support it. She's going to get a lot of shit for it from the country. We've been checking up to see if she's okay, so that she doesn't lose her job or anything. And at the moment, she's fine. But yeah, we know how the heat comes on, man. We've all had threats come against us. But hell, that's just the price you pay for fighting for your freedom. It's all good. It's great.
Well, it also comes down to the point of fact, and this is something that we interrupted that I had a thought on. After the protest, after that great success of it, and indeed after the dildo throwing as well, you see the media come out like cockroaches out of the woodwork, just spewing their venom and their lies and their deceit all over the thing. They wouldn't do that if they didn't think that people were on side, you know? It's just that simple. When you see the terrible coverage, I was just like, you know, I've been ashamed to be a New Zealander for quite some time since I realised what this country really is. And I didn't think I'd be any more ashamed, like I'd achieve any more, a higher level of shame at some point. But I did! I did! It's just awful.
That shit happens, man. Hey, I tell you what, though, you know what I like, dude, is social media. I like this Freedom Radio stuff, because then it takes the power away from the mainstream media that are owned by the corporations, because there's some stupid shit that they've been putting out there. The argument is so weak. The argument is so pitiful. It's just everybody's just who was unsure or didn't know what we're talking about, and they know bullshit when they hear one. And that's all that they can put on there. The spin doctors are lying, are running out of stuff. All of my iwi, all of my elders are all behind our protest movement, and that's bloody new. Because they hate protests, and they're like, you know, bloody young buggers, you're always giving us a bad name. Well, I tell you, they've been coming out all over our iwi radio and all over our taumata, saying, man, we're going to get in behind these protesters and we're going to support them, because at least they're out there doing it. When we were on that street that day, man, the power, I'm telling you, man, that power has freaked the shit out of me. I was holding on tight like a goddamn hurricane to hold that bloody, hold that hikoi under control. I tell you how hearty it was. All I had to do was say on the mic, on the megaphone, all I had to say was bloody right, and the city would have been bloody torn down. That's how pissed off the people were in there. I only had to say one word, and they would have bloody busted out, mate. That's how much power the people have. Now, what we need to do with it is, the question is how we're going to stay together and stay unified and making sure to address that the TPPA is defeated and that we retain the power for the people. That's the next question, that's the next journey. We're supposed to be in Auckland tomorrow dealing with that shit. To be honest, man, I don't want to go to Auckland. I want to stay home. I want to go get me a feed down the beach with some tuatuas or something. So I don't know what I'm going to do.
I think that it's kind of like, when you're an activist, you know you're not getting paid, right? And people don't understand. Okay, the protest didn't happen by freaking accident, all right? I spoke to activists after the protest, you know, who I got bought two beers and shouted a session. And it was just like for broke-ass people who got nothing, who spent the last 3 days before the protest up till 2 o'clock in the morning postering and papering up Auckland Central City to encourage people to come down for that protest and everything like that, making their way all the way hell out to the airport and then coming back into the city to continue to protest and things like that after that much work, all right? And then when they're walking home, somebody tells them to go get a job.
I tell you what, man, I'm down a few grand on last week's activities, and I say, get a job. What the hell? There's more important things and greater things. I say, get a life, you know? Get a life, man, and look around you and lift your head out of your ass. lifting your head out of your Pisiya's little office, and have a look around at the world. And that's the problem, man. We're missing out on a life. We're missing out on connecting with people in our community. That's all been destroyed by capitalism. We're missing out on connecting with our environment, because all we're using our environment for is to just pillage it and turn it into resources that we can trade. We're missing out on connecting with the universe, man. You know, this is the real deal stuff, and that we're all missing out on. I said, get a job. Jeez, pass, man. I got better things to do. What up?
It's like, I'm sorry, bro. I've got aspirations and dreams and shit, you know?
I got freedom in 5.2.
It's like, I'm sorry that I considered protecting my country from ruthless criminal scum as being a job when you don't. No. Just because you're not banging something with a hammer that somebody else is telling you to do, and you don't really have a choice in the matter, otherwise you won't have any rent money, that's not contributing that much to society. Okay, it's when you've actually created your own income and food sources and things like that. When you yourself actually tap into the universe and you start drawing energy for it to create things that do not exist yet, then you're no longer a slave.
Well, what I got out of the hiku when I got home, it's a great point, is that I made such huge connections with the communities between all around, from Waitangi to Auckland and all around me. Even right now, I'm still like keeping those connections growing. You know, I built a opetua, some soldiers for freedom fighters that we've got joined our cause, and it's growing and it's growing. And the young people, man, I got to pay respects to those young people out there. We had our run-ins, you know. I was pissed off at some stuff, but it had nothing to do with those young people. Some of the old soldiers who were using them, I was pissed at for their own personal benefit. That shit you got to watch out for, eh? You got to watch out for those buggers who are using the strength and the passion of this movement. So I got my eye on things, Vinny. I'm not going to bloody roll over and let this course be used for personal profit. But respect to these young people that are out there doing their thing. They're greenhorns, but their heart's in the right place, and I fully support them. And sometimes it might look like I'm actually putting them down, but I'm not. I'm just bloody trying to protect them because, you know, shit, safe. I try to run a safe cope of, we've got innocents in our army. A lot of these people who come and support these marches and support these movements, they just want to do what's best for their families and for their kids. And so when I say, you know, when I say pull out when there's heavy action coming, it's not because I'm not scared. I ain't scared of shit, man. I've been through those battles. I'm just want to be recognizing that there are innocent civilians involved in our movement, and they need to be fully understanding and aware of what they commit to. When we take on riot squads, these parents who are pushing prams, they fucking need to be notified that that we're going into the danger zone. And those kind of things, that shit happens, but you know, we've got to look after our people, man. We've got to look after our movement. That's all.
Well, this is the reason why I use a lot of comedy and humor with the protest chanting and everything, because honestly, people are angry at protest. They wouldn't be there if they weren't angry about something. And frankly, I like to get rid of some of that anxiety and dispel some of that rage and actually make it a little bit more fun, you know? I mean, just because you're opposing something that's bad doesn't mean you can't have a good time while doing it, you know what I'm saying? And that sort of togetherness that I felt, I hadn't actually felt that at a protest before, and I think I must have been to hundreds, you know, just covering them and filming them and that kind of thing. And for the first time ever, I even got distracted, right? Like, I never get distracted at a protest, right? Like,
yeah.
I saw that there was people blocking the road up the thing, and I left the whole massive protest that was going down the road and then just went up to have a look at these occupiers. And before I knew it, the protest has already made it to Victoria's Park, and they'd had a big concert and speeches down there, and I didn't know because I was walking around with the people who were occupying the squares.
Oh, no, that's it. We're seasoned up here in the north, that protesting and activism, and even some of my soldiers who are seasoned, we're getting caught up in the motion, and I have spent a lot of time trying to pull them back in and say, hey, we're here for a kaupapa, and our kaupapa is to protect the hikoi and make sure that our message is sent with huge passion, but it's sent safely, you know, to the best of our ability. and that was bloody hard yakka. Just in that light of things with that passion, we need that, Vinny. We need the emotion. We need the laughter. We need the anger. We need the tangi, the crying. You got to bring it all on, Hikoi. You got to bring it, because if you come and you're cold, it just doesn't send the message, you know. And that's the stuff that the corporates are looking for. They're looking for a passionless Hikoi. Says, nah, man, let's bring it every time. And I'm just happy to say that from the beginning of our Hikoi right through to Auckland and back up to Waitangi, that was powerful. There was a lot of powerful passion and everybody just put it out there. I had kaumātua who have never done a march in their life. And these old soldiers, man, served vets who came out and says, mate, we're coming with you, because every other avenue that we've tried in democracy and government isn't working, and they're dedicated now. They're dedicated to our cause and dedicated to our movement. So, yeah, they started a fire. This TPPA, this government, they tried to snuff it out, but all they've gone and done is fanned the flames, Vinny.
Well, as the old saying goes, we create our own demons.
Yeah, man, all good. And, all movements start small. All big movements start from small steps, and, it's the power from the people. I always say that, man. The people, once the people wake up and once the people come together, there's a great thing. Let's just make sure that the movement forward, let's make sure that that the movement benefits the people again. That's all I'm looking towards supporting.
I think that that's probably the idea. What's problematic is that the government, particularly John Key, in specificity, in fact, does not care, right? They just don't. And this is apparent because every time that they are advocated against, they dismiss whoever's advocating against them, right? As if they're nothing. What's really frightening for me is to see not just that happening from the government, because I expect that from the government, but yeah. I see the people, even people that I know, who should know better, yeah, calling people like us bums in the street. You know, that kind of thing it floors me, the level of ineptitude, brainwashing, and callous cruelty of my fellow New Zealanders towards people who are actually trying to save them from servitude and enslavement to foreign companies who don't care about them or their land.
Ah, that's human nature for you. That's the psychology of the beast, you know. We just got to keep waking them up. No one likes to wake up. A lot of people like to think that they're strong, that they've got a strong household and they provide well for their families. When you come along and you raise your voice and say, hey, everybody, watch out, there's a threat coming at you, and it's a threat that says it's your friend, but it's actually not, it's an enemy. People don't like to be woken up. People like to get through their day without too much drama. But hey, this is what we've got to do. This is what we're committed to. That's what activism's all about. If we don't wake anybody up and get people thinking, hey, well, then we haven't done our job. So, yeah. Every time that someone yells at me to get a job or whatever calls me a bum, hey, that means that I've succeeded in doing my job, that I've succeeded in waking that guy up, because he's going to go home and he's going to say, what the hell was that fella up to? Why was he spending all of his time and his energy and his resources on waking me up? And that's the seed that we plant, Finny. We've got to plant that seed before we can harvest that garden.
Now, during the media backlash, I'll call it, they came up to a lot of people and they go, what do you think you've accomplished here? Do you think you've achieved anything? And you know, foolishly, they were interviewing, you know, known activists who actually knew what they were talking about, who could see the scam in their question coming, you know? And it's like, yeah, dude, look, it's a symbol, okay? If you are overrun by criminals, let's say you're French, and your country's just been taken over by Nazi Germany in a day.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Do you, as the French resistance, say, oh, we haven't beaten them all yet, we'd better just give up?
Yeah.
No. You don't.
No, man. No. So, yeah, that's where we're at the moment. All of this, the spin doctor government. This is a popular government. It's been in power for two or three terms now. You know, it's, they know what they're doing. The Prime Minister that's in power at the moment, John Key, he's a very intelligent man. Do not underestimate that guy. He wasn't given the name the Smiling Assassin for nothing. He is very, very good at what he does. He knows how to spin the yarns and turn people around to make things look as if it's all been it's all part of the government plan to create prosperity. So, you know, we're up against some big boys. We're up against some big guns. So, hey, and I accept that challenge. I accept it. And the bigger they are, the bigger they are an enemy, it just means that they fall a lot harder. But fall they will. Because I tell you what drives me, Vinny, it's my children. When I get home and I have a look at my innocent children and I look them in the eye and they're under innocence in this plan by the corporates to take them over and to turn them into some freaking battery cage chicken, says, hell no. Hell no, you think you're going to take my beautiful children, indigenous children, and turn them into some battery cage bloody beast caged up to use as a tax file number that they can to turn into create huge profits for their families and that minority 1%. You think that I'm going to get away with that? I'll sacrifice whatever it takes, including myself and my family, to ensure that my children have the freedom that they deserve. And I says, babe, you want to play that game with me? Bring it on. Because my people have been fighting this fight for 200 years, and I ain't about to step down. Ka whawhai tonu mātou, ake, ake, ake. Ka whawhai tonu mātou, ake, ake, ake. Kia ora rā.
I have one major concern. Is it's not so much about... Let me just see if I can actually define this for myself, in fact. The problem I find with John Key, and I know the reason why he's called the Smiling Assassin, because I actually met somebody at a party whose father used to work with John Key on Wall Street, who was at the very company that during the same day where he got that nickname. You know what he did?
What? No.
He was commanded by the top brass of the company to fire 200 people, to put 200 men and women and their families out of an income, right?
Yeah.
He fired all of them one by one and felt nothing. He had a big smile on his face the whole time, felt nothing. And then they dubbed him the Smiling Assassin. Now, what kind of person would have so little emotion, so little empathy, so little care for others that they could deprive them of their livelihood and still sleep so easily and be so happy? And the answer is a psychopath.
Actually, I have heard that story. I just wanted to hear your version of it. Yeah, and that's what I heard too. And yeah, I don't know what the hell this country's up to, employing a psychopath as the leader of this country. But it just drives us to fight harder. People are waking up to it. Elections is next year. I know America's got theirs on this year. We're talking about it, and hopefully we'll get a bloody good leader in there. I don't know who the hell you choose, Bernie Sanders or whoever, but good luck, you know. Pick somebody, and it's not just about money. It's not just about the economy, but it's about our communities, and it's about our people. It's about our environment, so... Good luck to those guys. Canada's just done theirs. We've got ours coming up next year, and we're already planning to fight that fight. Other than that, Vinny, you know, we just keep doing what we're doing. We just keep on moving forward. We've got some more activist planes in action coming up in the next couple of weeks around lands reform acts that they want to change in regards to indigenous lands. And shit, man, you know, this is never ending. Now, just never ending. These guys, they're like locusts. They're like a plague. They just can't take enough. They just can't have enough. So
they
what
are,
can we do? We've just got to keep trying.
The greed is a bottomless pit that they consistently keep chucking things into that just disappear and never make them feel any nourishment or any fulfillment. That's why they have to keep taking, because they've got nothing. inside them. They've got no soul. They've got no conscience, mm-hmm. right? And I wanted to know as well, just from you, we've only got about 10 minutes left in this hour here. Haven't heard back from Penny yet. I don't know where she is or what she's doing, but I'm sure that it's probably, you know, really awesome. But I wanted to know how you actually kind of woke up to things in general and actually started activism. What was it that kind of spurred you into it?
Yeah, it's a long journey. We were involved back in when I was only 10 years old, 11 years old. Basically, what happened was my land tried to take my own land off of my family. And then there was a movement called the Manamutu Hake Movement. And my father was a secretary on that. It was just about protecting indigenous rights. So we just carried on from there. Then we had to protect our language. Our language is getting lost. All of the things that were important to our culture were threatened and being suppressed by this capitalist colonial plan to turn us into these, you know, these little tax file numbered caged, chickens. And yeah, we've just been fighting against it ever since. I'm getting older now, so I'm moving forward into the foot soldier. I love being a foot soldier, but you can't stay down there forever. And the my elders and my my older activists, they are telling me to step up. That's all. I'm just stepping up now into a higher role. But I'm also trying to support succession and to keep this going. You're right, Vinny. We don't get paid to do this, but the payment of satisfaction is doing our part to protect our culture, to protect our community, to protect everything that's dear and are precious to us. That's what drives me. That drives my wife and I, my family, and most of all the aspirations for a free, a safe, and free future for my children. That's the greatest driver that gets me up there in the middle of the night, hop on the truck and off to support the next cause.
Well, and I always found that it's very rarely the people who are very successful in our society. Like, I see these people looking up to John Keane and go, oh, he stole $50 million from people who were stupid enough to invest in derivative scams. Oh, what a successful man. And I'm like, for fuck's sake. Oh my God. Like, so people that have this illusion that the balance of somebody's bank account can tell you something about their character. Now, I think that's actually the opposite way around. The reason why somebody has a big bank account balance is actually more important than them just having it. All right. Now, did they invent something really radical? Did they change the world in some positive way? Do they advocate for other people? Are they an Aaron Brockovich who helped people who couldn't help themselves? Right.
Yeah.
Or are they a ruthless sociopathic scumbag who knows how to scam people and talks like a car salesman? You know. You know, and that's the thing that I'm starting to really get to grips with, because I feel like a lot of people are too tempted by that dark side. They're tempted by the riches. They're tempted by sex and drugs and all of that kind of stuff. Getting idolized. That's what they want. They want to be idolized. They want to live in perpetual comfort without having to sacrifice anything to get there. Now, I've noticed two differences between the approach that I make, people like you make, to life, is that we've kind of shunned off money as the reason for our existence, because we've realized that there's actually only one thing that has value, only one thing that we can't replace if it breaks, only one thing that we will actually value for a long, long time, even after we're bored with it. People. Mm. You know? Your children, your friends, your family, that kind of thing. It doesn't actually have an interest rate, you know? It can't just be created and just flumped into the money supply. That's why it's so much more important than money. Human life is. People forget that. That's why we're so... We're at each other's throats, all right? Let's say Pākehā are up against Māori, Pākehā up against Asians, the rich up against the poor, the cops up against the people, the politicians against the people, and so on and so forth. We're getting this fractured divide being just jutted in with a hammer and chisel, and it's fracturing, I think, our consciousness as a people, because we're not recognizing each other's inherent value. Do you value the person to your left? Yeah. Do you value the person to your right? Well, it's John Key, so obviously not. All right. Well, you're at least on the right track, gun. You know? Because I don't hate National Party supporters, but many of them hate me. You know? I don't hate John Key. I just spend 6 hours a day in deep meditation trying to send positive vibes to slippery banana peels, wet staircases, loose skateboards, and other things that might cross his path, and try to send positive vibes out to them so that he will, in fact, trip on them and then break his spine in half. You know, that would just be a wonderful day for me to see that kind of thing happen. And yet, I also instantly buy in to the fracture myself, don't I? By disliking John Key as a man and a person based on the actions and the things that he actually does, I'm automatically buying into this false you versus me sort of paradigm, right? However, if somebody is a known psychopath, can't tell the truth, even if it would be good for them, then I think you've got an obligation to dislike those people and try to mess with them a little bit, you know? Because they're going to destroy innocent people's lives.
I try not to buy into that whole hate. Stick to some good strategies just to achieve what it is, the goals that we want. It's a lot less painful, and I don't get so aggro when I'm just trying to see the wins. And I'm pretty good at winning, Vinny. I've done a few good things. I've knocked over a few mayors and a few corrupt councillors, and I've taken out an entire government. Helped when the Māori Party was formed, and we defeated the Labour Party when they were doing their bullshit. So we're good at it. We've been into by-elections and knocked over MPs in that section there. So we're good at what we're doing. We're good at challenging and waking the people up. We're just going to keep going with that. And you can tell when there's a threat and that we're doing a good job is when the most powerful man in the country refuses to turn up to a showdown. He doesn't want to come to the gunfight because he knows he's going to get his ass kicked. You know, that's just a sign of weakness on his part. And his time is inevitable. We've just got to stay focused, stay to the path, and we'll get there. We'll get there. The trick is to maintain that journey. Don't just get to another election, knock him over, and say, "Yay, yippee-yay," and then put another corrupt prime minister in. We've got to come together. And there's a million people that don't vote. Every election, there's a million people that don't vote, Vinny. Man, we've got to wake those fellas up and get them to come in and join a course, be freedom fighters, and get rid of all these capitalist corrupt bastards. Yeah. Hoinano, taku mihi mutunga tēnei, Vinny, my last kōrero. Is mihi atu ki a koutou te reo irirangi mo te tino ranga tiratanga. Mihi atu ki a koutou e whāna ki tīnei take te tino ranga tiratanga me te kotahitanga. Koe nano ki a koutou, ki a u ki te pono, ki a aroha tētahi ki tētahi. Ka whawhai tōni mātou, ake ake ake. Ka whawhai tōni mātou, ake ake ake. Kia ora tātou.
Ka pai, bro. Ruben Taipari, ladies and gentlemen, we will see you after the break at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Going absolutely crazy right now, trying to figure out how the hell I can find Penny Bright's number to connect her. She forgot to... Fucking activist, man. Yeah, that's what it is, isn't it? Okay, don't know what that number is. Don't know how to find Penny's number. It's an 021 something, I'm pretty bloody sure. that it's under Penny Bloody Bright. There we are, Penny Bloody Bright on my cell phone contacts. And crack her in. All right, sorry about this, ladies and gentlemen. I really must apologize. I can assure you, none of this is my fault. I'll do the best I can with what I got. All right, that's the number. That's the number. Boom. Add it to the call. And wabunga. No, it doesn't work. I have to try that again. Alright, I forgot to put in the +64 for the international calling code, which is kind of annoying. Yeah, that's right. Thank you. Thank you very much. Oh my god, I accidentally deleted the number, so I don't even know what the hell I'm dialing in now. Oh my god, save me, God, save me. Just make life work. It's really funny, actually, because I was watching a video about Lewis Black. If you don't know who Lewis Black is, you got to. It's funny. Just search Lewis Black iPad and have him yelling at an iPad malfunctioning him on stage. It's just classic.
Hi, really, this is Penny Bright on 021.
Oh no, she's not even
427.
Damn it, Penny! All right, I give up. I can't get in contact with her. She's not on the Skype. She's not at home, and she won't pick up her phone because it goes straight to voicemail there. So yeah. Yeah, that's really nice. Fuck you, internet. Oh god. God, I'm so sorry, ladies and gentlemen. This is probably the least professional broadcast that we've done this year. Conveniently, we've only done like half a dozen, so it's all good. It's all good in the hood. So I think I might as well change subject. I don't know what to do. Honestly, ladies and gentlemen, I've been getting driven nuts. Absolutely nuts these last couple of days from all sorts of weird things. It is way too hot. I can't even wear a t-shirt, all right? Otherwise, I overheat. That's how fucking hot it is in New Zealand. I can't think. I can't get to sleep properly because I, like, soak the bed sheets up. I mean, honestly, it makes moving to Australia sound almost unappetizing. And it's just... After so much work as well, like, I poured hours and hours and hours and hours and hours of work into that TPPA protest when I was there, and also into making the videos after the fact, right? And it's just exhausted me. You know, like, I haven't actually felt like this. Maybe it's because I'm getting a little bit older. When I was younger, I used to be able to do things like that, you know, just go out to a protest and then come home and edit the video straight away and get it uploaded and that kind of thing. It's just, yeah, that energy doesn't exist anymore, right? Until the last couple of days. And I think the difference was I've been starting to lift weights a little, you know. When you're a lot stronger, it gives you more energy, I think. But, yeah, my brain... It's, I don't know what's wrong with it. I'm finding it very difficult to stand with congruent thought, you know? I feel very uncomfortable all the time. My back is killing me. I think I'm also anxious about money, you know? Like, when I made those TPPA videos, they got thousands and thousands and thousands of hits. And nobody donated a fucking cent. You know? This dude put at least 30 hours work into that stuff, you know? Three separate videos and all of that kind of thing. And they're monitoring my PayPal, monitoring my Kiwi Bank, and it's only the automatic payments from the regular listeners that came through, you know? That's really tragic, I think. Nobody cares about the alternative media. That's sort of what it said to me. And what the hell is the point in even doing a gig that nobody even fucking appreciates, you know? But then, you think about all the people that actually are regularly contributing, people who actually take some kind of stand to support the things that they want to see in this world. And then you have all the other people who just sit by and go, oh, that's a great video, I give it a thumbs up, as if that fucking helps me. and I'm not poo-pooing anybody. Like I said, brain's like a little bit fucked at the moment. It's too hot, can't think, it's fucking raining outside, my guest hasn't fucking turned up, I'm broke as a motherfucker, you know? It's not a good day for Vinnie Eastwood, ladies and gentlemen. It's just not a good day. See? And you can tell when it's not a very good day because I start referring to myself in the third person. But yeah, it's quite a frustrating thing to have to do is, you know, just jam on radio when your guests don't bloody turn up, you know? It's pretty crazy. Quite annoying. And yeah, there's just nothing I can do about it. Unless...
Hello.
We've got Penny Bright on the line. Thank you, goodness. Oh Penny, I love you. Thank God for that.
I'm so sorry, Vinny.
Not as sorry as me. All right, so... I just had a full hour with Ruben Thai Party. And had a good chat there. He sung your praises. And I recall a week or so ago, in fact, I only just published the archive yesterday. That's how behind I've been on things. Had a conversation with our mutual friend Bruce Rogan again. Again, singing high praises of you. And I'm just starting to think, like, this Penny Bright character, she's starting to become a legend. Like the kind of people that get bronze statues of them in Auckland. Apart from the fact that nobody's going to shell out for that thing for you, are you, Penny? And you wouldn't really want it because you're not an idolatrist.
Well, I think to some people, definitely a corporate nightmare.
Well, we had a conversation and like somebody was like, oh, Penny's a bully. And I'm like, well, she is, but she's our bully, bro.
A bully? Well, I mean, I will stick up for myself and I won't back down. I won't take any shit. So if that makes me a bully, so be it. But I don't see it that way. I just see that I will defend myself. And if I think I'm right, I won't budge. And that's it.
And this is the reason why we need people like you. In fact, you are the person that I don't know anybody else exactly like you that has taken such a tenacious approach and self-sacrifice to try and get people, try to protect people, essentially, from the predators who are in this society who are so good at concealing their corruption.
Well, I have to say that, I was absolutely thrilled that you managed to get an interview with Ken O'Keefe. I'm not easily impressed, given my 61 years, but Ken O'Keefe really impresses me. He's just so gutsy and he's so articulate. But the main thing is that he's really gutsy, and that's why I've got so much time for him. We will speak his mind, and he's actually stuck his neck right out. And so good on you for getting an interview with Ken O'Keefe. I'd love to meet him one day. Yeah, I think he's great.
Oh, well, unlike me, you don't have cannabis convictions, so you can leave the country to go see him if you wanted to.
I completely forgot about your 4 o'clock appointment today. I've had a really, really busy day. What happened last night was I initiated a new petition, which will hopefully really throw a spanner in Auckland Council's work regarding this unitary plan and the, you know, how... they plan to rezone huge sections of the Auckland region and deprive citizens and ratepayers of having a say. And what I've done, I got the wording checked with parliamentary staff yesterday, and so the petition was launched last night at a public meeting in Kohimarama that had over 700 people. Any public meeting that gets over 700 people, and this is National Party heartland, whoa, is not to be ignored. Anyway, people were queuing up to sign it, and it says, I respectfully request that the House conduct an urgent inquiry into the alleged failure of Auckland Council to comply with their statutory duties regarding spatial planning, particularly the requirement to involve and consult with the communities of Auckland regarding amendments to the spatial plan as outlined in the Local Government Auckland Council Act 2009. And this is a big deal because this is the underpinning legislation regarding the spatial plan, which then morphed into the unitary plan that communities of Auckland were supposed to be consulted with in a proper way and involved at all steps of the process. And I've never come across, in my view, such a Mickey Duck process in my life. So what happens is you get the government has set up this this independent hearing panel, which is supposed to report back to Auckland Council in July this year. Now, what happens is that people have made submissions in good faith and what they thought was the plan. In the meantime, Auckland Council then makes submissions to the same organisation that's going to report back to them in July, and the rules get changed, you know, it's shifting sand. And so how the hell is that a proper process? Anyway, so I do hope that this will help to throw a spanner in the works, because the last petition that resulted in an inquiry, which was last year, helped to stop the Wellington Super City. It got 2 out of 3 of the local government commissioners rolled, and that was a petition signed by 43 people. So it's all about, in my view, using the system against the system, using the law against the law, if you like, and it's about being effective.
Well, it's about finding exactly what your target is, right?
Exactly.
Like if you're in the jungle and you've got a target that's on the other side of the jungle, you've got to be able to see through all the leaves and all the trees and all the undergrowth and all the mist and all the steam and all the sweat in your brow in order to see that target, and then you've got to fire a shot. One that actually travels and hits the target, because there's so many of these intervening things, and I found that this is the way I've looked at how the government is actually trying to keep itself from becoming criminally liable. Is they just make stuff up? Make stuff up and they throw it in everybody's way.
Well, the thing is just that our good mutual friend Sue Henry, who is one of the most effective political activists that I know, her famous words of wisdom are, the most important thing in life comes down to two words, be effective. And in my view, in order to be politically effective, relies on two things, focus and timing. You've got to be focused like a heat-seeking missile, because a lot of the time people don't know what they want. You say, well, what do you want? And they're not actually clear what they want. You need to be really clear what you want, and then just keep, you know, pushing really hard to get what you want. But if you don't know what you want, well, you're buggered, because, you know, how are you going to achieve what you want to do?
You're going to lose sight of your goals pretty early
on. Right.
Like, have you ever seen a lot of these activists? I think, you remember Nines, the guy who accused you of being a SIS informant? It's like, fuck that guy. But he tried to, like, bully me into getting involved with the Occupy movement by saying, Vinny, this is it, you know, we're going to throw over the entire system. I'm like, no, you're not. This is a war of attrition. You can't just throw over the tyrannical scumbags one-off, all right? You've got to pace yourself. You've got to be in there for the long haul and expect that you're going to have a long fight ahead of you. Because to jump in and think you're going to win it all in a couple of weeks, you know, a system that's taken 100 years of scumbaggery to put in place, is just naive.
That Occupy Auckland movement was a huge eye-opener to me, because I'm sort of quite a trusting person. And this, in 2012, I came to the realisation that, you know, some people are absolutely not what they seem. And if you ever have people who come from nowhere and who make a beeline, anything to do with the message or getting the message out, control of media, control of Facebook page, control of website, then ding, 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 especially if they don't want to give their real name. And if you just do your own due diligence and Google them, and if no track record comes up, you need to be suspicious, because when you're taking on the biggest of the big boys and girls, they are going to want to make your organisations dysfunctional. And the quickest way to make things dysfunctional is to have a lot of infighting, because people hate infighting. But the point that I'd like to make is, anyone that says there's Penny Bright SIS informant, when I've had over 4 decades of activism, I mean, what's the worst thing you can ever say about an activist? I mean, what a filthy thing to say. And why wouldn't people who were purportedly genuine activists have nothing to do with the person who said such a thing? You know, where's the solidarity?
It just comes down to, like, some people, they're not actually in it for the activism or the cause, they're actually in it for themselves.
Well, it's not just some of them in it for themselves, they're actually in it for the opposition. They're actually in it, in my view, for the people we're fighting against.
That too.
I mean, Well, that's a major thing. So what I've learned is that now I'm fussy who I work with. I want to work with people of good heart, brains, guts, and integrity, people who have a basic understanding of the principles of natural justice and fair play, and I will work with such people on an issue-by-issue basis. But don't ask me to work with people who are proven liars. Don't ask me to work with people who just are shit stirrers and are basically there just to make groups dysfunctional. I don't want to work. I will not work with such people, and that's it. So with like the anti-TPPA protest, I mean we've had a marvellous group in Auckland. It's our future. I think it's fair to say has done the heavy lifting over the last five years.
They do. I commend them strongly.
I mean, and we had a marvellous team. I mean, I was in charge of coordinating the postering because I think that's really important. People need to see the wallpaper up. Central, north, south, east, west, the word was most definitely out there. And in my view, the more posters, the more people. And also the fact that it had a lot of publicity, and the fact that we gave people a safe space from Aotea Square to Britomart, I believe that's what got people out in their thousands. And if people wanted to do other stuff, that was up to them, but there was an effort to try and sort of tailgate on our work and try to make the march all go to Sky City, which I believe would have been a disaster. We wouldn't have got the people, because who wants to put themselves potentially at risk? And I believe that potentially there definitely was a risk. So anyway, so that's it. We our mission was for that 1 hour from 12 noon to 1 was to get Queen Street packed, and I believe that we achieved our mission.
Yeah, according to just looking at some of the photographs that were taken by people in the sky rises overlooking the protest on Queen Street, it just went as far as the eye could see.
Well, it was a marvellous turnout, and that's what I just kept saying to people, just visualise Queen Street being packed. Never mind the other distractions and diversions, we just focus on our mission, which is to provide a safe space for that 1 hour to jam-pack Queen Street. And I mean, it did it work really, really well. And I think it gave National a huge fright. And in my view, that TPPA turnout has been a tipping point for National. And the next step was that for John Key to be publicly booed at the Nines. I believe that's the first time that's happened at a public sporting event.
Whoa.
And that's quite a big deal. Because what happened was, remember Shonky? Shonky had an appearance, and Tim Grosser was with Shonky, outside the Nines on the Sunday as well. So we had Waitangi Day and the day after, and thousands of people saw this new unique form of street theatre / whistleblowing. We had dressed up as John Key with a John Key mask but holding a speech bubble. And the speech bubble said, "I'm my buddy, US President Barack Obama's rent boy PM." Well, if he's going to call us rent a crowd, we'll give it back twice as hard. How do you like being called rent boy, John? Yeah? And on the other side of the speech bubble was, "I'm a shareholder in the Bank of America, which should do really well out of the TPPA." So that was Shonky's speech bubble, and thousands of people saw it. And of course, when you sort of play with your own ponytail and people grin, if they grin, you're in, and they remember. And so, so anyway, I like to think that might have helped. But John Key getting booed at the Nines, I don't think he was expecting that. But what I would like to see is that at every major sporting event, that's what happens. Yeah.
That would actually be quite classic. And the irony as well is, for me, being politically involved for a number of years, what I notice is that the elections are often during sporting event seasons, you know? And then you have a, coincidentally, you know, in inverted commas, very low voter turnout because people are far more interested in this country in sports than they appear to be in politics. But not at that particular game. Now, that's... You know, I've never seen anything like that. I've never seen anything like the TPPA protest. I there's a lot of firsts for me that have come up just in the start of this year, Penny. There's something happening, eh?
Well, I think so, and I think people are are actually getting it. Because as far as the TPPA is concerned, you know, there's a couple of sentences that summarise the whole thing, in my view. If the TPPA is supposed to be a free trade agreement, then how come tariffs are never going to be completely eliminated on two key New Zealand exports, which are dairy and beef? Game, set, match. If it's such a good deal for New Zealand, how come tariffs are never going to be completely eliminated on New Zealand dairy and beef? And Tim Grocer, I mean, why would he worry? I mean, he's over in New York as the ambassador, New Zealand ambassador to the United States. So in my view, well, you know, it appears to me he got his reward. But whose interest did he serve?
Well, technically, I think his title is embarrister.
But seriously, all the fine talk about, oh, you know, New Zealand's not going to sign unless we get a gold-plated deal for dairy. Tariffs have not been completely eliminated. So where's the free trade? Where's the great deal for New Zealand? That's it. And as soon as you argue just that point with anybody who supports the TPPA, the argument falls over. They do not have a reply to that. I know, because I've tried it.
Hey, here's another question as well. I mean, we know that the text has been released, not the quote-unquote side notes. And I also want to give big ups to Jane Kelsey and a number of the other New Zealand, shall we say, scholarly intellectual activists who've actually gone through this monster of a document and tried to break it down for people. What's problematic is that actually it needs to be broken down even further. Okay, so you've got convoluted businessman wankery language in which the original document is done, and then you go boom, okay, and then you've got these people who are educated, who are activists on our side, that can actually run through that stuff and break it down what it actually means in their terms. And then for most people who don't really speak that kind of highbrow English, it needs to be broken down even further into the things that are so simple that a child could understand it.
Well, that's right. I mean, that is the secret, is put it on a placard. You know, you need to be able to boil it down to its bare bones. But that thing I've just said, I believe, you know, that is a real simple argument that they have no answer to. But the thing is that if people want more information, you go to the www.itsourfuture.org.nz, have a look on there. My understanding is that the legal papers there, the work of the experts and going through in detail in order to break down what this 6,000 pages of TPPA text, etc. means. The work has been done, so if you want to bone up on it a bit more, well, that's have a look for yourself. But that's what we need to do now, in my view. We need people to consolidate now so that instead of, you know, if someone shoves a microphone in your face for why are you marching down the on the TPPA, you're able just even to give that simple answer that I did, you know, because what we want is we want people to be able to think for themselves. We want people to know why they're doing what they're doing. And you need to be able to explain yourself, in my view.
Well, again, this is something that I found in the reaction by the media, is they went around and they're just like, okay, who doesn't look like an activist who knows what they're talking about? Let's try to look for the most ignorant person on the protest and then ask them what it's about and then just claim that none of the protesters know what they're there for, you know? That kind of just underhanded, dodgy sort of crap just pisses me off.
Well, the other thing now that what I believe we need to do is, we're now at the stage where we need to do what we can to stop the ratification. Now, of course, the TPPA is looking in serious trouble in the United States. And where's the fire and what's the rush in New Zealand? If it doesn't look like the United States is in any mad rush to actually be able to ratify it, and it seems that any presidential candidate that supports the TPPA is not currently polling over 5%, as I understand it, so it ain't popular. And so why would New Zealand want to rush, you know, through law changes in order to ratify the TPPA when, you know, the leading light of it, all the United States, hasn't yet?
Maybe because our Prime Minister is a globalist, banking henchman, scumbag, economic hitman, and doesn't care whether or not the people want it.
Oh, well, that's, you know, that goes without saying.
I'm just taking a stab in the dark.
Well, the thing is that what I would like to see a lot more effort paid it, or a lot more attention paid to, is the fact that, I mean, how many times have I ever said this, put me on your show, Vinny, John Key, our New Zealand Prime Minister, is a shareholder in the Bank of America. Now, if the Bank of America, along with the other big banks who want the TPPA, they do not want to be re-regulated, they don't want Glass-Steagall brought back, to another great big concrete wall between boring, safe, commercial banking and dangerous, risky investment banking. They want the hands-off that gave us this huge derivatives crisis. They don't want regulation, okay? So if John Key stands to personally profit from the TPPA, how is that, in my view, not a major corrupt conflict of interest?
Well, I would say it wouldn't be considered a corrupt conflict of interest if every single person in New Zealand's official capacity, whose job it is to expose and punish the corrupt, is either asleep at the wheel or on the take.
Well, the thing that I am thrilled about is that New Zealand now, in the, what I think is rather meaningless, but anyway, the Transparency International Corruption Perception Index, it was released in late January, and New Zealand is now perceived to be the fourth least corrupt country in the world. So under John Key's stewardship and leadership, New Zealand has dropped from the country that's perceived to be the least corrupt country in the world to fourth. And so I think that is a significant drop. The other huge news is, of course, that New Zealand has finally, on the 1st of December last year, ratified the UN Convention Against Corruption. Now, I've been campaigning for that for the last 5 years, and it's very interesting that within 24 hours of me sending out a blistering email, locally, nationally and internationally, saying, well, how is it that New Zealand can be perceived to be the second least corrupt country in the world when we haven't even ratified the UN Convention Against Corruption? The next day, 1st of December, New Zealand ratified. Now, politics of embarrassment, I think that's quite likely, because the ratification was in the sausage machine. I asked MFAT, Ministry of Foreign Affairs and Trade, what's the timeline on the ratification process? And there was no timeline. Within 24 hours of me sending out the stinking bloody email, New Zealand had ratified. Now, what's the big deal there? Is it another meaningless piece of paper? In my view, no, it's not. Because the UN Convention Against Corruption, and I suggest people Google it, about 60 pages, have a read for yourself, gives us a new anti-corruption toolbox, because we're now in the implementation stage. It goes sign, ratify, implement. And now I believe that we can crank up again the call for New Zealand to have an independent commission against corruption. We desperately need such a body, because our who are tasked in New Zealand at the moment for preventing corruption, or to whom you're supposed to make complaints, the Serious Fraud Office, and in my considered opinion, they are spectacularly useless.
Well, they're quite good at covering up serious frauds. I mean, I thought that was why they were called the Serious Fraud Office.
Well, what I have, I have a number of letters from the Serious Fraud Office when I've made complaints alleging bribery or corruption, and I've got a letter back from the Serious Fraud Office saying, you know, they declined to investigate my complaint because they saw no evidence of serious or complex fraud. It's like, I didn't make a complaint about serious or complex fraud. I made a complaint about alleged bribery and corruption. The Serious Fraud Office is supposed to be the lead agency to whom you make complaints about alleged bribery or corruption. And this is, so hello, they pass the parcel because they say they see no evidence of serious or complex fraud. It's unbelievable.
It's the same line that I keep hearing from everybody about cannabis, corruption, conspiracy. Oh, I've seen no evidence, I've seen no evidence. But here's the evidence right here. I'm not looking at it, I'm not looking at it. See, I still haven't seen it like a plausible deniability.
Yes, well, I mean, yeah. That's definitely a big part of it. But no, I'm absolutely thrilled at how things are now starting to move. I think that people are starting to get it. I do think that the shine of Teflon John is absolutely going. And what was the icing on the cake for me, as I said, was John Key being publicly booed by the NRL crowd. I thought that was that was great. And if you saw the TV coverage, I mean, Paddy Gow sort of trying to make sort of excuses in my view, but John Key looked quite shocked. You know, he's used to being Mr. Popular. Well, I mean, how on earth an ex-Wall Street banker can be so popular? I mean, he must be, in my view, the most spin-doctored politician on the planet.
Either that or an incredibly talented, lying, psychopathic scumbag.
Yeah, anyway, but I definitely think the tide is turning. But what I think we need to do now with the TPPA, there's one thing politicians understand, Vinny, and it's votes. It's as simple as that. So I think what now needs to go on is the pressure on all these National Party ministers and MPs. Basically, if you vote to ratify the TPPA, we, the people, will not vote for you. That's they can understand. And if people pledge to campaign with their friends, family, workmates, etc., to do everything they can to ensure that they don't get back in, that is something that I believe will focus the minds of those MPs.
Well, I was thinking about a hashtag campaign. So if you come up with anything anti-John Key or anti-national or rather just laying out the facts, etc., because I'm starting to wonder about this whole are we against them, are we with them, that kind of fractured dialogue that we've been having, that we lose a whole lot of people with that infighting bullshit, right? And it just comes down to, you know, the Nike logo. Well, if we just turn the Nike logo upside down and turn it into Nokey, right, that'd be nice.
Well, I mean, the thing is that, you know, this so-called, you know, left-right thing, I mean, that went out from 84, 87, when under, you know, the Labor government, the Rogernomics government, they got away with things that National could only have dreamed about in their wildest blue dreams. So in my view, the terms left and right, they lost all meaning, over 30 years ago. In my view, it's really simple. You put a big line in the sand, and on one side of the line is corporate minority, and the other side is public majority. If you just put that simple line in the sand and apply it to any issue that comes up, things fall into place really clearly, in my view.
Now, this is something I was talking about yesterday on Facebook. Got a big reaction from it. Let me see if I can quickly find that status for you. Here we are. Who else wishes it wasn't in-fucking possible for the average Kiwi to ever buy a home in their own country? Right?
Mm-hmm.
I was just thinking about this quite a lot, because ultimately we're being sold off to foreign assets. I mean, we just had a New Zealand Herald article come out that said that they've got sales meetings and expos in Singapore where investors come in and buy New Zealand houses without having to even leave Singapore, right?
Mm-hmm.
That kind of thing. Now, what percentage of New Zealand land and houses and stuff is good for foreigners to own? You know, should we have 90% foreign ownership, 50% foreign ownership? Should there even be a limit? You know, should we be 100% foreign owned and be tenants in our own land and only ever be able to approach foreigners whenever we want to live somewhere? Right?
Mm. Well, what gets me, and it really concerns me, I mean, I've had a lot to do with the so-called Auckland housing crisis. And I believe it is, in my view, it's a manufactured crisis. As you know, I was the one that found the smoking gun letter from the Department of Statistics that recommended medium population growth projections for the Auckland spatial plan. And this myth of an extra million people coming to Auckland, which was 300,000 people more than the medium growth projection, an extra million people was the high population growth projection. Only two people pushed that, and that was the Mayor of Auckland, Len Brown, and the former Chief Planning Officer, Dr. Roger Blakeley. Now, I got a Social Services Select Committee of Inquiry into this matter, because how was it that that those major infrastructure providers like Auckland Transport and Watercare were relying on medium population growth projections for infrastructure, but the council was relying on high population growth projection? So, you know, the roads, the schools, et cetera, are going to pop up like magic mushrooms the next day. I mean, you've got to plan for these things. And the other thing that really gets me is that the degree to which the Auckland real estate market is being used for money laundering. Now, I did an official Information Act request to the OFCANS, Organised and Financial Crime Agency of New Zealand, who are supposed to be the lead body that investigate money laundering, And just like they never did any due diligence on the increased risk of money laundering arising from the Sky City deal, I have it in writing from Ofcams, they never did any due diligence on the increased risk of Auckland real estate being used for money laundering. And there's the anecdotal evidence of suitcases full of money, blah, blah, blah. Well, you know, so who's benefiting from all this so-called Auckland growth and this big methane property bubble, apart from property developers, speculators, overseas investors, and money launderers? I mean, how does that benefit ordinary people?
Well, I just had my rent raised today for the second time in 2 years, so it certainly ain't fucking benefiting me.
No, 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 it is. It's just shocking. But, I mean, well, as you know, I mean, I'm a 2016 Auckland mayoral candidate, and one of the things that I intend to do when I do a Winston and sweep in as a mayor of Auckland, because, and people think, oh, you're dreaming. Well, actually, if you look in 2013, only 36% of Aucklanders bothered to vote, just over a third, which leaves 64% who are sitting there waiting to be inspired by a candidate who's not same old, pro-super city, pro-corporate interests. And what I want to do when I'm the mayor of Auckland, what I'm going to do is to use part of the money from the mayoral budget, because the Auckland mayor, unlike any other mayor, has a dedicated budget of 0.2% of the operating budget, over $4 million. And I'm going to have my own team, small team of highly professional, independent forensic accountants and auditors who will report directly to me, and they will go through the books with a fine tooth comb, and they will find out where every dollar is being spent, borrowed and invested. And when they report to me, then I'll report back to the public. And first of all, you need to know where the costs fall before you can look at cost savings and efficiencies, because in my view, we need to get rid of all these private piggies in the middle, and we need to return as many services as possible back in-house, cut out the piggy in the middle contractors and consultants, bring it back in-house, we should save a fortune.
I was talking with one of my listeners the other day, and he says, yeah, I'm voting for Penny in the mayoral race. And I go, why is that? And she goes, well, there's no choice. You know, it's the only choice, you know. I can't wait to have her worship as mayor, you know. And then somebody else says, well, I don't think her worship goes down with a lot of people. And I go, that's not true. Worships often go down with a lot of people.
Indeed. Well, what's interesting to me is that, last night, so here we are in the wilds of Kohimarama, National Heartland, a public meeting of over 700 people are very concerned about the proposed changes to rezoning. And where on earth was mayoral candidate Victoria Crone? Nowhere to be seen. The only two mayoral candidates there were myself and Mark Thomas. So, I mean, hello? I mean, I have no idea what Michelle Bogue or Susan Ward or these other National Party women spin doctors who've been pushing Victoria Crone must have been thinking, but wouldn't you think that in this core sort of National Party heartland, somebody who's supposedly got the backing of key National Party people would be there? Nowhere to be seen. So anyway, but the thing is this, I mean, I've had about 18 years now of local government. I mean, I think I've got my unofficial PhD in local government. I mean, involved in it long enough. And I mean, so you've got businesswoman Victoria Crone. Well, you know, what do business people really know about local government? You've got Phil Goff, who was a Roger known back in 84 to 87, and another safe pair of hands, in my view, for corporate interests. Well, he's a central government MP. What experience does he have of local government? And then you've got Stephen Berry, you've got David Hay. But, I mean, none of these people are opposed to the super city. They haven't fought it solidly ever since it started, like myself and a handful of others.
And none of them have a track record for
that's the key thing, because, I mean, people need to remember that words are cheap. Anybody can say anything. The most important thing is proven track record. And, in terms of that, like, for example, I mean, I've got two cases on foot. One, my rates case, in the district court, still waiting for a reserve decision from a district court judge on that one. And then I've got my defamation case against Auckland Council CEO Stephen Towne in the High Court. Well, whatever happens, if it doesn't go my way, I will appeal it, and I'll keep going because I'm not budging, because I'm not wrong, you know, and I will not back down. And, I mean, the fact is that, you know, faint heart never won fair go, and if when the going gets tough, that is the time not to budge. Because I had so many people saying, oh, Penny, you've done enough now. You sort of back off and think, no. But, I mean, it was my very good friend Grace Hayden who really helped me on my house, eh? And full credit to Grace. But, I mean, that was it.
Grace has a... she's kind of like one of those characters in a superhero movie that nobody knows has any powers, but as soon as they show it, you realise they're more powerful than anyone else.
Well, no, enough. I mean, you got to give credit where it's due, but I mean, that's the thing. I mean, I prefer to work with people that I know and trust, and when you know, it's going to crunch time, they've been there. I mean, that's that, you know, whole friend and needs a friend indeed, and that is dead damn right. But I think that, you know, my rates case, well, I mean, I've put my freehold home on the line to defend citizens' lawful rights to open, transparent and democratically accountable local government. None of the other mayoral candidates can say that. And nobody should have to do that. They should not have to do that. But this rule of law, I mean, that's one of my key planks for my mayoral campaign is that Auckland Council must be held accountable to the rule of law, and so must council-controlled organisations. And people think, oh, yeah, pay your rates. Well, hang on a minute. Open the books. Don't you care where your money's going? Don't you care your rates keep going up because you don't know where the money's being spent, and you can't do line-by-line accounting if you can't follow the dollar? It's your dollars.
Now I want to read out something here for you, Penny, because I took a screenshot of this mid-last year, and I completely forgot that I'd even taken it. And then, I was cleaning up my computer's desktop, and then I just came across all these photos and screenshots that I'd taken over the time, and just to throw away into different folders, etc., categorize them, and came across this one where I was defending you. This guy named David, he says, Penny Bright is the rich-ass activist who lives off the rent her tenants pay her for the house she owns freehold and refuses to pay rates on. And I go, David, by that logic, anyone who earned enough to own their own home in the last 100 years as an evil oligarch, even if they live on $150 a week from one tenant that they live with and spend 60 to 70 hours per week doing activism for the community and exposing corporate corruption free of charge for the sake of, and without any thanks from, that same community. Do you know why Penny filed documents in the High Court officially disputing to pay rates? Because it's a lawful requirement for council to explain where all public monies are being spent, and they're not following the law. So she's putting her own home on the line in order to take the bastards to court to get them to open the books and explain where everyone's money is being spent. Now, how about yourself, bro? How much have you put on the line to expose corruption in this city? The only thing you've put on the line is a Facebook comment. And for some people, self-sacrifice for others isn't a choice. It's an obligation.
Oh, thanks for that, Vinny. But, I mean, the thing is, yes, I mean, hello, I'm not on a benefit. What am I supposed to eat, grass? I mean, lawn mowing clippings. But the point is this, that, I mean, I've never made any secret about yes. I do live off flatmate income. Is that unlawful? Hello? You know, I mean, the thing is that because I'm not on a benefit, I can do effectively what I want each day, and I do. I look at what's coming up each day. How can I pick up the biggest titanium spanner and biff it in the works in order to help stuff up what the bastards are doing? And, I just find that's a really cheap shot. You know, I mean, yes, I do own my home freehold. I was really lucky. I bought it at a time when interest rates went down. I paid off a 24-year loan in 8.5 years. So I worked hard. And, you know, if I was a material girl, I'd probably be a millionaire. But that's not what drives me. It's not. So that's my choice. But, I mean, people pick and whinge and, you know, moan about that stuff. It's a bit sickening in my view. Anyway, so
It's just like, when you're arguing with somebody who doesn't know what they're talking about, and they're not that bright to begin with, the only defense that they really have against people who relay out facts, evidence, and actually come from the moral high ground, is to literally make shit up, right?
Well, yeah.
It's their only defence.
Well, what's interesting is that, you know, I like to think I've got a, you know, I've got a good name, and the thing is that, I mean, I know because my sport is to go onto Kiwi blog, and then what I do is put some really unpopular comments there, and what happens is because people, they don't have the arguments, what happens is, I mean, there's some real vicious ad hominem stuff. I mean, some of it's really nasty. In fact, you know, I've made it quite clear I'm not putting up with defamatory or really offensive comments. Like one person on Kiwi blog said that I was a nasty, disrespectful C.T, and put that up on Kiwi blog, and what happened was I didn't even have to make a complaint. The host, David Farrah, said that was so unacceptable. This person got three strikes and one in a week off and has now learnt some manners. But I mean, that's one of my basic 101 rules in life, Finny, to put it bluntly, take no shit. That's it.
In fact, that's exactly the lesson I learned just recently, you know, being a radio show host and all of that. I mean, I'm in the yes. spotlight and I've got people coming at me from all over the place.
Yes.
People who literally are C.T's, you know. It's just, you block, you know, listen to me, yeah. It sounds like there's a chicken in my office.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, that's the thing. But, I mean, I think what you have to do is... there's a line between sometimes you suck it up and don't give, you know, don't give things oxygen, but then other times if there's dirty, filthy, blatant lies being told, then you do need to stamp your foot and just say, no, that's unacceptable. Like, I mean, my defamation case against CEO Stephen Towne in the High Court, I mean, yeah, after all the sort of the crap I've been through with Auckland City Council, you know, 22 arrests, etc., I'd never once gone for gold, any form of damages, and I hadn't. But when it was in the public domain, he stated, Ms. Bright has made wild and inaccurate accusations. Well, Ms. Bright doesn't do wild and inaccurate. I make sure I do my homework and I get my facts straight. So, you know, so, and I said to the council, I said that if you're going to start messing around with my good name, it's a different story. And so I followed through, and it's the first time I've ever taken a defamation case. Hopefully it'll be the last, but but that's it. You know, take no shit. I mean, who do they think they are? You know, to
they think
tell
they're
lies
gods.
About you. Well, that's right. And I mean, that's the thing. That's why I keep coming back to the rule of law. That's it. The rule of law needs to be upheld regarding citizens' lawful rights. But if you don't know your rights, you haven't got any. But if you do know your rights and you know their statutory duties, you've got them in a pincer. Because I tell you what, half the time they don't know what their statutory duties are. And I mean, why the hell it's, you know, someone like my job to tell them their job? Oh, bugger if I know, but it seems to be the case. But that's the secret, eh? Keep going.
I see that because I find that some people use my own tactics on me and they go like, Vinny, what you've said is inaccurate, and they actually show facts and documents and things like that to prove that I'm actually wrong, and I go, well, my God, I actually am wrong. I'm sorry for being wrong, and is there anything that I can do to correct the situation and make comeuppance at all? Now, the reaction that you get from some public officials when you show them that they're proven wrong, they go into silent mode, you know?
Yes, that can be the case, but yes, I just think it's really good for listeners to consider that. I mean, you know, like, best not to open your mouth on something unless you know what you're talking about. You know, don't give an opinion unless you've had time to consider it. Otherwise, it's just blah blah blah.
Yeah.
And the other thing is that you can end up actually everybody can end up being a really powerful person if your word means something. You know, if you say you're going to do something and you follow through and you have a reputation for keeping your word, that's a really big deal. And that's something everybody can do. Don't give your word lightly, but if you say you're going to do something, do your very best to follow through.
I think that's what happens when you've got integrity. The question is, does our system in and of itself have a chance of actually being saved, or does it need a reinstall?
Well, what I've found over the years is, and I mean, that's where I've had some success, is is actually, like I say, using the system against the system, using the law against the law. I mean, yeah, so it's just, yeah, like this latest petition is going to be very interesting because, yeah, just to see how that goes. But if you actually go to the underpinning legislation which spells out the statutory duties of these people in power and what they're supposed to do, and then use this mechanism to hold them to account. See, I don't so much use the lawyers or the courts, although I'm often taken to court. I mean, you know, my proceedings, my defamation proceedings, that's proceedings I have initiated. Normally I'm on the receiving end, I've been arrested, or I've been taken to court by others, and I've defended myself, which is slightly different. But what I'm finding with, like, these parliamentary petitions is it costs nothing. You're going straight to the lawmakers. And what you're saying is this law has not been followed. You want an inquiry. But what I've found is in order to be effective and get that, you need the public fuss. But it can work because I've proven that it can work. So I'm just saying that people, you know, it would be, oh, God, we have to go to court and it's going to cost a fortune and lawyers, blah, 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 blah. It's like with the Mangawhai case. I haven't been in touch with Bruce, you know, the last week or so, but I understand that they were going to take proceedings to the Supreme Court themselves, which is absolutely my advice. You know your case better than anybody else. Do it yourselves. Do it yourselves, you know? So, yeah, I mean, you'd be surprised. I mean, every individual has no idea how potentially powerful and significant you can be as an individual if you just put your mind to it. You know, seek truth from facts and get on with it. Yeah.
I think it's really important to recognise that people don't realise how powerful they are until they have to be.
Well, that's right. And one of my little sayings is basically do something every day that scares you. Harden yourself up. You know, feel the fear and do it. And then things get easier and easier and easier. Because, I mean, you know, I remember when I was, you know, first a union delegate out in this big home appliance factory back in Masterton. And, I mean, I'd have this big hard-covered sort of notebook thing and I'd have to leave the line to go and sort something out. My little heart would be beating away, you know, because you don't come out of your mother's womb knowing how to do this stuff. You learn through practice, you know. But, yeah, some stuff is scary, but it's good for you. It's good for you, in my view. It hardens you up.
Yeah. My uncle was a beekeeper, and first time he went out to the beehives, you know, the whole apparatus and stuff like that to prevent him from getting stung. And after a couple of years, though, he didn't need that thing anymore.
Right.
And he'd just go out do his beekeeping in a singlet and shorts. And he'd come home one day to my auntie, and she'd go, "What are those in your arms?" And he goes, "Oh." And he had like about 20 bee stings just sticking out of his arm, and he just brushes them off, you know? People can be really, really hardened.
Yeah, I don't know about, different things. I mean, you know.
I mean, think about the bee's nest, the wasp's nest that you've upset, and the kind of things that they throw at you, and how it first felt, and how it feels now with the benefit of time and experience to put it into context in the whole general scheme of things. It's almost like you're being attacked by little insects now, isn't it?
Well, it is interesting because, yeah, it is. It is interesting, that one. And in terms of, you know, once upon a time, I remember going to like Auckland City Council meetings, and you're like this insignificant little fly or something. And they just seem so big and so powerful, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, sort of 18 years later, it's a bit of a different story because you sort of got the hang of it. You got the hang of it. You know how to use the processes. You know how to, you know how to use the processes and to be effective. Yeah, so, but I mean, anybody can do it, you know? Anybody can do it. Just, yeah, like I say, put your mind to it. Know your rights. Don't be scared to read stuff. But another little tip for folks is go to source. Get your information from source. Don't rely on hearsay, gossip or whatever, and don't repeat hearsay or gossip.
Well, we'll see you again sometime, folks. Thank you very much for listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Go and check out Penny Bright's website, pennybright4mayor.org.nz, or just search Penny Bright for Mayor. We'll see you again.